Welcome to Ravens Among Us on Datha.com. I am your host, Datha Hewlin. Ravens Among Us features conversations with people and organizations who are making a difference in the lives of others. Listen to be inspired, encouraged, and entertained by their stories. Meet the Ravens Among Us on Datha.com. That glorious voice belongs to Cindy Sadler. For my very first episode of Ravens Among Us, it is perfect to introduce you to someone who has made a difference for me personally, as well as in the lives of many other singers. In 2007, this classical singing diva and voice teacher decided to channel her education and experience into the role of opera director when she developed a training program in Austin, Texas called Spotlight on Opera. Off and on from 2008 to 2012, I was blessed to gain knowledge and opportunities in the program, so I know firsthand how much Cindy gives of herself to other people. I'm delighted today to put the spotlight on mezzo-soprano Cindy Sadler. Cindy, thank you for chatting with me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Datha.
Yes. I wanted to meet with you today specifically to say thank you for Spotlight on Opera and to share your efforts with listeners, but before we get into that, I would really like to hear a little about your personal story and lead up to how and why Spotlight became a mission for you. So you're currently working with Austin Opera as Gertrude in Romeo and Juliet, right?
Yes, I am.
How is it going?
So far, so good. We've just completed our first week of rehearsals, and it's a great cast, and it's a beautiful show.
That's wonderful. So let's back up and talk about when you began singing. When did you begin singing, and what drew you to it?
Well, I sang as a child. I grew up in the Church of Christ, which has a very strong musical tradition. What it does not have is an instrumental tradition. There are no instruments in the Church of Christ. And so we sang a cappella hymns in four-part to six-part harmony.
Oh.
And they were, you know, old-fashioned gospel-type hymns, mm-hmm. just fun to sing. Mm-hmm. So I always really enjoyed doing that. But I was never in choir or anything. It was just, you know, it was just fun for me to sing in church. And my family's very musical, and I always took instrument lessons. I played piano, guitar, oboe, and then a little later on, I was going to the University of Texas, living in a women's co-op, and a friend and I were interested in singing at the Madrigal Dinner that the Texas Union sponsors every year. I think they still do it. And we kind of, she played guitar and I played guitar, and we sort of worked up some songs, and we went and auditioned for the Madrigal Dinner. And the woman who was coordinating the music for it said to me, you know, you have a really good voice, but you have a very limited range. And I did. My voice is low, and it, you know, I had a pretty short range. And nobody had ever said to me, you have a really good voice before. Hmm. It had never occurred to me up until that point that you could take lessons to learn to sing. And this woman was the first one who said to me, you know, you really should train your voice. You really should go get some voice lessons. So I went and auditioned for voice lessons. And I remember I sang for Leonard Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And I sang My Country Tis of Thee, because mm-hmm. I didn't have anything prepared. So right there in his studio, sang My Country Tis of Thee. And he too said, you know, you have a really good voice. It should be trained. So mm-hmm. I studied with a graduate student named Tim Snyder. He was a tenor. And I just fell in love with voice lessons almost right away.
Really?
I just loved the sensation of singing, the way that classical singing. I didn't know anything about opera except little bits and pieces that I had heard on TV, and I wasn't particularly interested in it. but I like the feeling of singing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what drew me into it. And after studying with Tim for about a year, I realized that there wasn't anything else that I was studying that compelled me the way that did. Yeah, so that's kind of how I got started. And I just, after about a year, I decided I wanted to be a music major.
What does music do for you? What does singing do for you?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer because it is such an integral part of who I am, mm-hmm. that to not be able to do, it's sort of like saying, what does being able to speak do for you? Uh-huh. You know, it's a form of communication for me. Music is a very special form of communication because music says things that words cannot say. You think about it. The music pervades our lives. It's in every form of media that you hear, and it's often used as underscoring, but it's used very particularly to heighten certain emotions, to lead you in a certain direction. And when you take it into a form like opera or art song, it even more so is it calculated at a very high and very artistic level to give you a certain kind of experience. Mm-hmm. And I am just drawn to creating that kind of experience.
Yeah.
It's such a deep part of who I am that if I were to lose the ability, it would be not unlike being an amputee, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand that. I think music moves you in ways that almost nothing else can. You personally, and then also the audience for sure, if it's sung well.
The audience is a very important component of that. Mm-hmm. Performers require an audience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people in the audience may think that they are on the receiving end, but they're very much on the giving end. When you have a good rapport going with your audience, you can feel it on stage. Mm-hmm. And the audience is actually feeding energy back to you. And it's a really, really important cycle. Mm-hmm. And I believe that one day scientists will actually figure out a way to quantify that. I think it's a scientific thing, and I mean, it sounds very woo-woo when you say mm-hmm. it, but I'm sure that there is some sort of scientific explanation for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do feel when I'm performing that, you know, for one thing, that it is my responsibility and privilege to be giving something to the audience, to be channeling the music for them, the character for them in a way that maybe many of them are not able to do for themselves. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, the composers and the librettists' wishes are channeled through me to mm-hmm. them, and they give something back.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I remember you saying that before, that it's a privilege, and I always appreciated that, and I agreed with you about that. So I'm interested to know, did you ever, it sounds like your voice developed pretty quickly.
Compared to some people, this is going to sound terribly arrogant to anyone who is a student of voice, but it did, I was lucky in that it did develop rather quickly compared to many people's. Mm-hmm. A lot of people struggle for a very long time, and I'm certainly not perfect then or now, but I do feel like I got the basics of it down fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. However, I went through, as I was developing, a lot of different repertoire. There are many things that I sang back then that I don't sing now, although there's a lot of stuff that I do. And a big dramatic voice takes a long time to develop, mm-hmm. to get to the point where you can sing what you're supposed to sing.
I'm interested, as you were developing, and even now, well, let me preface by saying, you're a very confident person. Some of us deal with stage fright, and it's kind of sometimes can be almost crippling. You don't seem to deal with those kinds of anxieties. Am I wrong, or have you ever had to struggle through that?
I very frequently forget my words right before I go on stage. Very frequently. And I just talk myself through it and basically say, you know this. As soon as you get out there, you're going to know what you're saying. This is just you being a little bit nervous. Mm-hmm. We all have to sing under less than ideal conditions from time to time. Last year, I had to sing two performances with laryngitis, which was one of the scariest things I've ever had to do. And I was very, very lucky that the opera company was very supportive. And the piece we were doing actually was a Gilbert and Sullivan piece that we had microphones for the spoken dialogue. And so they boosted my mic for the singing because I could sing, but I couldn't get any power out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could have been a lot worse. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, that was the most nerve-wracking performances I've ever had.
Wow. That would be really scary.
Well, there's an element of possible injury to yourself when you're singing on laryngitis. Mm-hmm. But I didn't feel like I could back out of the performances. So I called my voice teacher and I said, what should I do? Mm-hmm. Help. And got some advice and then I was able to go on with it.
That's good. So I'm going to back up a little bit. When did you feel like your career started to take off? What was it? What was it that did that for you?
I mean, there's not any one point that I can really, there's not, you know, the big break.
Right.
I'm still waiting for the big break. There have been many steps that in retrospect, I can look back and say, well, this led to something else that mm-hmm. was a big deal for me. So one of them probably was, the summer after I graduated, I went to do a summer program, called IIVA, which stands for International Institute of Vocal Arts. My voice teacher at the time, Mignon Dunn, was teaching there. And I went down and did this program. And immediately after that, like 2 weeks later, one of my friends from the program and I drove up to Dallas and did auditions for Chicago Lyric Opera's apprenticeship program, which is now called the Ryan Center. But at that time, it had the rather cumbersome name of Lyric Opera of Chicago Center for American Artists. or LOCCAA, as mm-hmm. we used to call it. Mm-hmm. So Ryan Center is much easier to say.
Yes.
And I auditioned for them, and I could tell that I hadn't done very many auditions at all. I hadn't done very many opera roles at all. I'd done some scenes, and I'd done a couple of things in college, and, you know, had done this HMS Pinafore, but I had certainly never done anything really professionally. But I could tell that it went very well. Mm. And sure enough, I was invited to come to the finals in September. At the same time, I was applying to grad school, and I was actually getting ready to get on a plane and go to Philadelphia to audition for the Academy of Vocal Arts when I got word that I had received a full scholarship to University of Illinois.
Wow.
And my teacher was there. And so I did not end up going to AVA. I didn't even audition for them. School was starting in like a week. And then a few weeks later from that, I went up to Chicago for these auditions and was accepted into the Lyric Opera Center for American Artists. So that was, that thus ended my grad school career. I was at grad school for one semester. And I figured that, well, you know, it couldn't be too bad if I was going, right. you know, it couldn't be too bad to skip grad school if I was going to go to a major apprenticeship right off the bat.
Uh-huh.
I did that. And that really gave me some, I guess, a little bit of cachet. It gave me a little bit of ability to get my foot in the door mm-hmm. in other places that maybe I wouldn't have had.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was that I would consider that a big break.
Yeah.
And I was very, very lucky to have it because a lot of singers don't get that kind of trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I went into Phantom of the Opera out in L.A., which was nice because it enabled me to make real money with which I could fund the beginning of my opera career. And while I was out there, I did an audition for a Wagner opera that was being produced in Arizona, and that in turned into two ring cycles for me. So I wasn't working nonstop by any means, but I had some very nice things that happened for me at the beginning of my career that enabled me to sort of get it going.
That's great. How does marriage affect having a singing career?
Well, the first thing I have to say about that, marriage or kids or anything, is you got to live your life.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be married and you want to have kids, then you should do that regardless of what your job is. I mean, doctors do it, lawyers mm-hmm. do it, high-powered business people do it,
mm-hmm.
and professional singers do it.
Mm-hmm.
It is not possible to have a successful marriage as a singer or a musician or anybody who travels a lot without a partner who understands what you do and is willing to put up with it. Mm-hmm. And there is a heavy burden on the person who stays home mm-hmm. and has to take care of everything and has to take care of the pets if you have them, or mm-hmm. in some cases children. It looks very glamorous to people who are not in the profession, what we do, that all the travel and going off to sing. I mean, when people, you know, hear that you sing for a living, they just think, oh, that's so much fun. It's not mm-hmm. even work. Well, it's actually not glamorous at all, except for brief, really sparkly, fantastic moments. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard on everybody. Right. It is hard, but this is what we do.
So it's really about marrying the right person.
I think
like
so.
Said, who understands and is really supportive.
I think so.
But it can be done.
It can. Oh, it absolutely can be done. If you want it, you'll find a way to do it, you know?
Yeah, right. As with anything, right?
Exactly.
That's great. Well, let's move forward to, at some point you started teaching at St. Edward's University, and somewhere in there, 2007, you got this idea, or somebody had the idea for Spotlight on Opera. So will you tell me about that? How did that come about?
Well, what happened was Michael McKelvey, who was then the director of the music department, asked me if I would be interested in running a one-week opera camp. St. Ed's had a couple of other camps, but they didn't have anything like that. And I thought that sounded like fun. So, yeah, I said, sure, I put it together. It was called something else at the beginning. It wasn't Spotlight on Opera. I don't even remember what it was called. So we did that 1 week, and it was successful. We did some scenes at the end of the week. The next year we did 2 weeks because we realized that 1 week was really not long enough. Again, we did scenes. We realized that 2 weeks is really not long enough. And the third year we went to 3 weeks. And I think that might have been the year. I think 2010 was the first year that we did a one-act opera. We did Johnny Skeeky in a translation, which I wrote. We updated it to Austin in the 1980s. And it was a really cute, fun production. Mm-hmm. We had a great cast. And we did that in some opera scenes. And we just kind of moved on from there. It's kind of been going strong ever since. When I left, and Michael McKelvey left at the same time, and it became clear that St. Ed's didn't really want the program. Mm-hmm.
Why was that?
I don't want to say that they weren't supportive, because they were, but we didn't have our own dedicated space. Right. We were constantly having to like schlep props around all over campus. And that just was a lot of trouble. And so I just, you know, we took it. We found, we did a lot of stuff at the Bacchus Conservatory. They were very, very kind and supportive to us.
So here's what I remember. This is, from my perspective, this is what I saw. I saw you working really, really hard, not getting paid for it. if you were, not very much from what I could tell. Trying to get space, trying to get students, you know, managing people. I mean, you were managing people who were working regular jobs outside of singing, or maybe they were trying to be singers professionally. I mean, you were managing a lot of different things, and I'm sure you're still doing that. And so what was the motivation to take Spotlight from St. Edward's, or when you left, to take it with you and to continue going through all of these years and the difficulties?
Well, there's a couple of different reasons. One is that I've always been interested in arts administration and in stage directing. And, you know, every singer, there comes a point where you don't sing anymore. Now, I'm lucky. I'm the kind of voice type that I can probably sing a really long time. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. there's going to come a point where I cannot sing professionally anymore. Mm-hmm. And you have to look ahead and see what your retirement job is going to be. Mm-hmm. And I had actually had a little bit of experience running a program before, and I felt like, all things considered, that I was really good at it and that I liked it. And I do. I really actually enjoy being on the administration side. I wish that I did not have to deal with the budget, but every every administrator wishes that. So, you know, but I like all the organizing. I like working with young singers. And I also have, for many years now, have had a sideline called The Business of Singing, in which I offer workshops and private consultations mm-hmm. to singers, because there's nobody out there really who's teaching people how to get into the business. Mm-hmm. Very, very few universities or conservatories offer training specifically for singers.
Right.
And I was just, I just discovered that people were, you know, had so many questions. I did when I was starting out. And it just seemed to me that there were so many opportunities to teach people about this stuff in a more structured environment. So I came up with these lectures. I started teaching people this stuff. And I just really have a passion for helping young singers find their way.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because when I was starting out, that's who I depended on, was older, more experienced singers to help me. There wasn't any kind of formal training. You know, certainly my voice teacher helped me. The voice teacher is usually the first person singers mm-hmm. go to. But, mm-hmm. You know, I depended on singers who were further up the food chain from me to help me out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, there really needs to be a little bit more centralized way of getting this education. Mm-hmm. So that's something I continue to this day, and it's a very important part of Spotlight.
Right.
So there is that. I want to help singers. I want to help singers at all levels of their career, not just the young artists.
That's something that I really appreciated, that you allowed singers of all ages and experience levels to participate in Spotlight. So, and I was going to say why, and that's, I think,
say. That's one of the things that actually makes Spotlight really unique, because mm-hmm. most of these training programs don't take people who are hobbyists. I like to call them avocational singers, because I think that sounds, I think that's more accurate. Mm-hmm. It's an avocation for them. They don't necessarily make money off of it, but they're very serious about what they do. They're serious artists.
Mm-hmm.
And those are people I'm interested in helping develop. For a multitude of reasons. One, because I believe that art belongs to everybody. Two, because I believe in being an ambassador for opera in particular. And I think that avocational artists have a very, very important role to play in that. These are the people who are singing in the chorus at Austin Opera, at the Gilbert and Sullivan Society, in church choirs, at Conspirare, and all these wonderful, wonderful professional and semi-professional choirs and amateur choirs that Austin has.
Mm-hmm.
We have tons of them. And many of the people who are singing in the choruses of that or singing some solos for those things are people who would also like to do some stage work.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't much of an outlet for them to get their moment in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
Thus the name Spotlight on Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important to me to give those people a chance to do stuff too, because I think their contribution is really valuable. And they're also people who go out and buy tickets to everything else. So,
right.
You know, I really think that you can't discount the importance of singers who are doing this, not professionally necessarily, but again, who want to enrich their lives and other people's lives with their own art. So it's always been really important to me that Spotlight have a component that is for people who work 9-to-5 jobs, can't necessarily take 4 weeks off in the summer to go and do a program somewhere.
Right.
I want to make it possible for them to be able to come and do it. And the people who do this give up a lot. I mean, you think about it. 4 weeks, they are coming from 6 to 9 and sometimes a little bit later, and they're giving up most of their weekend to do it for 4 weeks on top of their 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm.
We're asking a lot of those people.
Mm-hmm.
But they come back year after year, so they must like it.
Yeah, that's true. And you're also doing Spotlight concerts. Does that fall under the umbrella of Spotlight on Opera?
Yes, this is a new sort of venture, a new division of Spotlight on Opera. I couldn't really keep doing the fall and spring version of Spotlight on Opera, which is more like a community opera troupe than a training program. And I also realized that what was missing for me is that I really wanted to help professional singers in the Austin area and emerging artists who are in a category somewhere between professional and student.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're breaking into the career. they're probably going off and doing young artist programs where they're sort of apprenticeships, like what I did in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to get the experience that you need. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I want to do something for my friends and for me. Mm-hmm. We have so much vocal talent in Austin. There's actually a lot of people, a lot of singers who make Austin their home, but they're professional singers who travel all over the world to sing.
Right.
And so I thought, I'm going to form a concert opera. And that way, I can hire my friends to come sing stuff. We can learn roles that we need to get on our resumes, because opera's expensive to produce. People are hesitant to take a chance on an unknown quantity.
Right.
If you have a role on your resume, even if you've just sung it in concert, you're much more likely to get hired. And I'll give you a case in point. Nicholas Simpson, who is one of our tenors who's been with us since, I think, the third season. We did, a couple of years ago, we did a concert reading at Il Trovatore, and he sang Manrico. He was scared to death. He didn't think he was going to be able to hit that high C in Di Quella Pira, which of course he nailed, and it was fabulous.
Yeah, of course.
And almost immediately after that, he got hired to sing this role, and he's very young to be singing a role like Manrico. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no question in my mind that he can handle it, but would he have gotten that, would he have been considered for it if he hadn't done the role? I think it was probably a boost for him. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not taking credit for Nicholas's career. He's a fantastic singer all on his own. But I think that providing that kind of experience to people is really important. We're going to be doing one professional opera, concert opera, a year, at least to start out, and one emerging artist opera. And this year that's going to be Così fan tutte, and we're doing it on May 22nd and 24th. I don't know where yet. Mm-hmm. But we have a cast of emerging artists that I'm really excited about. A lot of them have sung with Spotlight before. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited for them to have the opportunity mm-hmm. to do this. There's at least two of them that are learning roles that are really going to be something they need to have on their resume. They'll get hired to sing those things.
That's great.
Yeah, and that's the whole point. And then mm-hmm. at some point, I hope we're going to have a young artist program, which will be for singers who are maybe not ready to sing a role, but they can understudy a role, they can sing chorus, they can get coachings with our fantastic music directors, Kristen Roach and Niall Matsuoka, and there will be some real benefit to them, that they'll be able to be around singers who are a little further down the road than they are, and sort of prime them for the next step for them. Because in the singing career, it's always about, what is that next step? Right. How do you get that next rung up the ladder?
Right. Right, exactly. You were talking about, for singers, it's always what comes next. And so is this a priority for you? And are you good at living in the moment? Or are you always looking towards the future?
Well, I hope that I balance the two. As a professional singer, I must always be looking mm-hmm. in the future, because I work freelance. Mm-hmm. So, and in the opera business, it's always, what have you done for me lately?
Right.
You know, it's always about the next gig you have coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I am always looking ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I do have to look ahead and say, okay, what happens when I'm not ready to sing anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, for me, is arts administration. I actually would love it if somebody would offer me a job running a young artist program. That would be sort of a dream job for mm-hmm. me.
Would you keep singing?
No, I'm not mm-hmm. ready to quit singing. So anything, I am first and foremost a performer
right.
and a singer, and I'm not by any stretch of the imagination ready to give that mm-hmm. up. I still feel like I have a lot to say.
Absolutely.
I'm in my prime, my vocal prime. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not ready to walk away from that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, really love working with young artists mm-hmm. and I really feel committed to helping them have the best possible experience they can mm-hmm. have getting their careers off the ground, because mm-hmm. it's hard. It is so hard, so expensive. And it makes me sad when I see people getting resentful and bitter about the business.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible business to be in. I know people tell that to these kids when they're starting out, but there's no way to know how awful it is until you get into it. And yet, when it's not awful, when the art part of it is so wonderful, that for many of us, it supersedes all of that. It certainly has for me.
What's so terrible about it?
Well, I mean, where do I begin? There's a lot of really fantastic people who work in the business, but it's just the nature of it. You know, let me put it this way for a layman. How would you feel if every month you had to go on a job interview? Every single month. And if while you were at your job, you were under constant scrutiny and held up in front of the public, that your job was to some degree public, and your work could be discussed publicly on blogs or media of any type, that your chances of getting hired for the next job depended on how well you performed on a certain job, that pretty much everything you do is subjective, mm-hmm. and subjected to somebody else's taste as to whether you're doing an adequate job or not. That your appearance would be a vital part of whether you were considered a successful candidate for any given job. And then within that, I mean, everybody in this business is an artist of some type, and you know what they say about artists' egos, and it's true. You're constantly having to balance, you know, egos. It can just be a very, very brutal business. Mm-hmm. And you know, I happen to believe that most people are good. I'm an optimist. I think most people are good, and most people mm-hmm. want to do the right thing. But we are all sinners and fall short of the glory of God. So, you know, bad stuff happens. Yep. And it's just it's difficult tough. And expensive business to be in. Right.
So like you said, the art is what keeps propelling you forward to keep doing it. The feeling of the art, what you get from it. Yeah. Amidst all of the stress of it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have a theory about this. I think that any kind of artist, is hardwired mm-hmm. to need to make art. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you don't, you'll get sick. Mm-hmm. I think you'll get physically sick. I think you may get mentally sick. You will never be right if you don't allow yourself to make your art in some way. And I've seen this happen to people, mm-hmm. To close friends and to colleagues that mm-hmm. for whatever reason feel like they have to leave the art behind. Mm-hmm. But you can't leave it behind because it's part of who you are, and mm-hmm. you are compelled to make that art.
Right.
And I've seen people become healed when they go back and allow themselves to do it.
Wow. How do you maintain balance with everything that you have going on? Marriage, singing, directing. You've been directing other places now. You're doing Spotlight and Opera year-round. How do you maintain balance?
I'm not sure I do. I think that of a necessity that things do get out of balance from time to mm-hmm, time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when you have downtime, which inevitably happens in this business, then you try to bring things back into balance. So mm-hmm. like this last year, I was working a lot. I was gone probably 9 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. The longest time was 3 months at a stretch that I did not wow. come home. So when I do come home, then I make a real effort to, you know, to be the wife, mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. cook for Eric as much as possible and, you know, and try to take some of the burden off of him mm-hmm. of stuff he's been doing and, you know, just make sure I spend time with him and my mm-hmm. family and clear off my desk, which inevitably has become a big mess, and just take care of all those things, mm-hmm. you know, just kind of mm-hmm. get back into some kind of routine. So it's like, in a way, you're always playing catch up.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as the other things, I do a lot of other work while I'm out on the road. You're not just doing that job mm-hmm. you're working on. You're preparing for the next one. Mm-hmm. You're studying music. You know, you're sitting there, you know, writing out staging, figuring out staging, and I'm constantly emailing. So I'm putting in 8-hour days mm-hmm. when I'm on the road singing. Mm-hmm. It's just not all singing work necessarily.
Right. So how can others help with Spotlight and Opera?
Oh, what a wonderful question. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we're about to launch a fundraising campaign. We're hoping to raise $25,000.
Mm-hmm. And that'd be great.
Yeah, it would be great. And it would take a lot of the pressure off of what we do, since we are entirely funded by tuition at this point. Mm-hmm. And so certainly contributions would be very welcome. Mm-hmm. You can make them now if you like. Mm-hmm. Hopefully very soon we'll be able to take tax deductible donations. And if anybody's interested in doing that, you can just email me at info@spotlightonopera.com. That's our website, spotlightonopera.com. Mm-hmm. We also have Spotlight Concerts Texas with a TX, .com, and that's particularly for Spotlight Concerts. Sign up for our newsletter, and we don't bombard people with information. You'll just really get it when we're doing an event.
That's true. You don't bombard people. And you can sign up at spotlightonopera.com.
Yes, you can.
As well on the contact page.
Yeah. And we'll be doing a fundraising concert in March, which we're still planning. So I hope, you know, buying a ticket to that would be very helpful. And we can always use volunteers. In fact, right now, I am actively recruiting board members for Spotlight. And we could really use an attorney, we could really use somebody who's good with finances, and just anybody who's really interested in helping these young singers and helping propagate the art form like that, or maybe somebody's just interested in sitting on an arts board for their own reasons, which is fine too. And if you don't want to be on the board, then we can, the board per se, then we can also use people for an advisory board, which is a little less pressure. And we can just use volunteers of all kinds. It'd be great to have somebody who could volunteer for publicity or graphic design or any kind of technical aspects. You know, we can just, if you can do it, we can probably use that skill. And it really enriches the experience of our young artists. And then it makes the experience better for the audience, too. And I should say, regarding our audience, as much as our mission is to provide a good experience educationally for our young artists and also from an overall experience standpoint, we really make an effort to make sure it's a pleasant experience for people. And there's no yelling and screaming and making people feel bad, I hope. But we also have a mandate to provide a really good experience to our audiences and a low-cost experience.
Right.
You know, our ticket prices top out at $20. You really can't beat that. And
for a full opera.
Yeah. And we have reduced pricing for seniors, students, and military. So you can see an opera for as little as $7 from us. And and we hope, you know, if we get enough contributions that we could even make it free. That would be ideal for me. I would love it if nobody had to pay to come to this and nobody had to pay to see the opera. That would be ideal for me.
Hopefully this will help you get more people coming. And then also for singers, when are the auditions and what operas are you considering for this summer's production?
Well, this is another thing we do that's a little unique. We don't decide on our summer repertoire until we've heard all our singers. And we are going to be doing a series of auditions at universities around Texas. But we also have two audition dates here in Austin. We're doing one in March and one in April. So, but we also, we take DVD and YouTube auditions. Because again, I don't want it to be a financial burden for somebody to have to audition for us. So, you know, we have in the past cast some very wonderful singers off of video and we will continue to do so. So
yes, because students come from out of state.
We do have some students come from out of state, even though we don't provide housing for them. But this is new this year. We have a housing coordinator who is specifically helping people. Now, we're not guaranteeing that she will find people a place to stay, but she's there to help people find a place to stay.
Right.
So that's something we did have it a little bit last year, but now she's like official this and moving forward, you know, we're hoping to be able to provide housing at some point. The other thing that's new this year is, well, you were asking about the repertoire. We're considering Carla Floyd's Susanna, which is a 20th century opera. With many, many roles, which is great for our singers. We're considering Hansel and Gretel, The Magic Flute. Hansel and Gretel would be our first children's opera if we do it. The Magic Flute, Madame Butterfly, Pirates of Penzance, and The Barber of Seville.
Wow, what great selections.
Yeah, and yeah. we'll do two of those, mm-hmm. and what we choose is going to be based on what singers we mm-hmm. hear, and that enables us to really make sure that we give the singers that we think we can get the best possible experience. Mm-hmm. It always happens that somebody has to sing a role that's not ideal for them, mm-hmm. but we try to minimize that. And mm-hmm. we want to give as many people as possible a chance to sing a role, mm-hmm. a full role, because mm-hmm. they need that as right. in their development. Right. And then on top of that, we'll also do scenes and we'll do several concerts. And in fact, I'm really excited. We already have two of our concerts worked out. Last year, we went out to Stonehouse Vineyards in Lakeway. It's a beautiful winery out there on the other side of the lake, and just a beautiful, beautiful space. And we took a bunch of our singers out there and did a concert, and they loved it and, wow. and asked us to come back this year. So we have a concert scheduled out there again. And we have one at the French Legation Museum, which is a great concert venue. It's mm-hmm. outdoors, but it's a really lovely concert venue for okay. people. And you can come sit out under the oaks there. It's all shady, and you know, have a glass of wine and listen to the opera.
That is so beautiful. Is there anything else that you would like to share with singers, with audiences, anything else about Spotlight?
Well, please come and see the productions. Mm-hmm. And even if you're afraid that you're not sure that you'll like opera, this is a good way to sort of try it out. We have scenes programs. Every year we do a what we call Aria Extravaganza at the Whole Foods flagship store
okay.
in downtown Austin. And we basically set up a piano in their food court and start singing arias. And we've done this for 3 years now.
And it's amazing how good the acoustics are. People can still hear you yeah. even though there's all that noise.
It's pretty noisy, but mm-hmm. They really like having us come, and we're very grateful for that. And word has started to get around. They've started to advertise us more. They had a beautiful bulletin board for us last year, and people come in early and stake out their tables so they can sit there and listen. And then some people just kind of get sucked in from shopping and end up staying around, and it's great. I think it's a great way to bring mm-hmm. the opera to mm-hmm. a variety of people. Mm-hmm. It's not something you see every day. Mm-hmm. So we usually do that at the beginning of the session, and this year it's going to run from July 19th to August 16th. So it'll be sometime around the 19th or 20th of July is when we'll do that at Whole okay. Foods.
Well, I've kept you for a really long time, but we covered so many great things, and I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate you doing Spotlight on opera, and thank you for being a Raven. So to learn more about Cindy Sadler, go to cindysadler.com, and to learn more about Spotlight on Opera, check out spotlightonopera.com. You can also connect with Spotlight on Opera via Facebook or subscribe to their mailing list. And don't forget to go treat yourself to hearing Cindy and her colleagues perform Austin Opera's Romeo and Juliet this January 24th, 29th, and February 1st, 2015. That does conclude this episode of Ravens Among Us. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. To lead us out, we will hear a little more of Cindy performing Lux Aeterna from Verdi Requiem. Until next time, God bless you all.